And you're listening to Ozarks at Large. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Christina and I have worked together on Weekend Ozarks at Large for...
Close to a year.
The show itself, a version of Ozarks at Large at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, been on the air at KUF for about 20 years.
So it's one of the staple Sunday morning programs.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
It feels funny to say that, but yeah. And what we try to do with Weekend Ozarks at Large, because Monday through Friday, the show is on at different times. It's not on in the morning. And when we first went to a daily show almost 3 years ago, the Sunday show, I was doing it by myself, I think. And it was just kind of a collection of some of our favorite stories from the previous week.
Because the daily show is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yes, it is. And so now there was a sixth. But when you, Ify was producing Sunday,
yes.
And then she moved. And then when you came along, you had the idea... said, why don't we do some new material on Sunday? With the idea that Sunday morning is a different kind of time than noon or 7 p.m.
Right, and kind of a different sort of feel to the show, too.
Right.
You know, kind of, I don't know if relaxed is the right word, but I mean, easy like a Sunday morning.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So we've expanded the show, and many Sundays it's almost, not entirely, all new.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. All of this to say, the reason that we can give you 6 days of local and regional news and information and entertainment is because of listener contributions.
Right. Listener contributions make up almost all of our budget.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, underwriting, but we do. We raise almost 90% of our budget on our own, and 60% of that comes from listeners just like you.
The biggest slice of the pie is from listeners.
Right. And if you would like to call now and support Ozarks at Large on Sunday mornings, the numbers to call are 575-5823 or 800-522-5823 or online at supportkuaf.com.
We did want, with this new sort of vision of Weekend Ozarks at Large, we did want to have still some of that feel of this is what happened the past 6 or 7 days.
Right.
And to that end, Timothy Dennis has helped us out in the last... He started working here in August.
In August, yes, of last year. Yeah.
And what he has done is because he works very hard on the newscast portion that begins our daily show every day. He produces it, talks to the people, gets the interviews.
Right.
And so he then puts together... at the end of the week, this sort of week in review.
Week in review. And here it is for this week.
One worker was killed and 3 others were injured after an accident at a nuclear power plant in Russellville last Sunday morning. The workers were performing regular maintenance at Arkansas Nuclear One, which is owned by Entergy Arkansas. Terry Young is a spokesman for the facility.
As we were moving a generator stator, which is a very large component at Arkansas Nuclear One, that stator fell as it was being moved out of the turbine building.
Young says that Entergy is deeply saddened by the loss of one of its employees. He says that the accident poses no danger to the public and no radiation was released. Entergy, along with state and federal officials, will be conducting an investigation as to the cause of the accident. The Arkansas House of Representatives on Monday completed the 3rd override of a veto by Governor Mike Beebe. The veto was of a bill that requires voters in the state to show a photo ID before casting a vote. The House voted 52-45 for the override. The governor said the bill is a solution looking for a problem. Stephen Meeks, a Republican representative from Greenbrier, spoke for the override, saying the bill is a needed protection.
We are trying to protect the integrity of one of the most fundamental rights that we have here in America. And as a matter of fact, when I talk to citizens across the state, they tell me time and time again that this is a common sense solution. Why aren't they doing this? It doesn't make sense.
Representative John Walker, a Democrat from Little Rock, spoke against the override, taking issue with Meeks and others' assertions that the bill protects rights.
But there is no justification that he has for the belief that there is voter fraud in Arkansas or any place else that's of a substantive nature, anything more than a token number of people who may not properly respect the exercise of the vote.
Supporters of the bill have referred to former Democratic Representative Hudson Hallam's guilty plea to voter fraud for destroying absentee ballots as an indication for the bill's need. Opponents claim that a voter ID requirement wouldn't have stopped that instance of fraud, and that the requirement will negatively affect the voter turnout of poor, older, and minority voters. Although the federal sequestration cut Federal Aviation Administration funds for air traffic controllers at many municipal airports across the state, one Northwest Arkansas city has decided to provide funding for its own tower for the time being. Tuesday night, Fayetteville aldermen voted to spend just more than $20,000 per month out of the city's general fund to continue tower operations at Drake Field. Airport Executive Director Ray Boudreaux says that the decision by the city council was a wise one.
Well, it's about flight safety. It's about the flying public. It's about the number of folks that use our airport that should have that service. The other problem would be that if we allowed it to close, reopening it, even if the decision was reversed, would be very, very difficult, because the FAA, if the tower was closed, would then be allowed to remove all the equipment and to essentially strip the building, and it would be extremely difficult to get the tower back in service.
Under the current contract with CI Squared, the FAA pays for 100% of the operational costs of the tower, but with the sequestration order, that contract would have ceased on this very day. However, the city's emergency contract for service with CI Squared will take over tomorrow. Boudreaux says that he is unsure whether the same number of staff members will be used to operate the tower, but other changes to operations will be made.
The one thing we did do in order to stay with a reasonable budget for the cost was to reduce the hours that the tower will operate. The tower currently operates from 6 in the morning until 10 at night. We reduced those hours down to 8 in the morning and 10 at night, essentially because there's just a very, very small amount of traffic that occurs before 8 and after 8 at night.
As part of the city's decision to pay for continued air traffic control operations at the airport, aldermen also approved resolutions to authorize the city attorney to take legal action to delay closure of the tower and to express displeasure with the FAA decision to close federally contracted towers at airports across the country, including the very one at Drake Field. The Federal Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration has allayed Governor Mike Beebe's initial concerns about the recent pipeline rupture and oil spill in Mayflower. Wednesday, the governor spoke with Cynthia Quarterman, head of the agency which runs under the Department of Transportation. Matt DeCampbell, the governor's spokesman, says that the agency answered a number of the governor's questions concerning the pipeline's history and how the cleanup effort will continue. He says the agency will be working towards answering some fundamental questions about the pipeline.
Once they reach it, it has to pass a number of tests before the pipeline can be restarted, and it's probably going to be some time before that occurs, both to determine what happened and to determine that it's replaced and safe before it can be started again.
DeCampbell says ExxonMobil will most likely continue to cooperate in investigations of the accident. He says regular pipeline operations will stay off until the oil company addresses the many questions public officials have. As the state investigation gets underway looking at the oil spill, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel toured the site Wednesday where the pipeline ruptured. He says it left him with more questions than answers. He also told reporters he's bothered by how ExxonMobil, which owns the 65-year-old pipeline, has minimized the accident.
I have been reminded by Exxon's representatives that this is a relatively small spill and cleanup is going just great. I hope that they realize that to the homeowners in this area, it is not small, it is catastrophic. And for those who fear for their drinking water, things are not great.
McDaniel also said this highlights the need for improvement to pipeline maintenance, inspections, and safety standards. From the Herald and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large.
It's Weekend Ozarks at Large.
That's right. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And the past few days, it's been obviously the spring fundraiser at KUAF, and we took some time this week, and we'll have a few more next week, talk to people about the relationship between other things in life and public radio.
Right.
And it's not really a stretch.
It isn't. I mean, everything, I think public radio is so community oriented that when you start reaching out into the community, there really are a lot of valid comparisons.
And I like the word community because that's something we strive to have be our mission, right, at Ozarks at Large. We feel that we try our best to reflect what's going on and tell you what's going on in your community. And we're community supported. It's the biggest by far. Part of our budget is generated from right here, mm-hmm, in this listening area. 800-522-5823. You can also pledge online at supportkuaf.com. Coming up on the show, how the insect world is somewhat like a public radio fundraiser.
Right.
You talked to Dr. Donald Steinkraus. We also talked to the band Three Penny Acre about a public radio model that they, mm-hmm, have used and with some success.
And you spoke with an author about
the subliminal
mind.
Yes. However, our colleague Antoinette Grajeda also talked to someone.
She did. She spoke with a preacher from Trinity United Methodist Church in Fayetteville. His name is Terry Gosnell.
And she came up with this idea. It's like, well, a church, and I think it's appropriate that we're doing this because I hear from so many people that they listen to Ozarks at Large to or from, mm-hmm, church. But her idea was, well, there's a communication going on in a church. You have the congregation, you have the pastor, she or he is up at the front of the church, so you need to communicate, and you're trying to connect with someone's passion. And we think that's somewhat what we do with, mm-hmm, Ozarks at Large and public radio.
Exactly.
So she asked, first, before you do anything else, you have to have a congregation. They have to be interested, they have to be connected and want to come spend part of their day with you, and she asked about that.
The way that we do that, or the healthiest way, is to be an attractive, vibrant community. Statistics show that 87% of people that come in the doors, they make their decision like in the first few minutes. And so it really has nothing to do with the preacher, quote unquote. Hopefully it won't. There are a few people that are attracted by the pastor, and sometimes that goes well, sometimes not so well. So the onus is on me to, yes, connect with them initially, but then help them get connected on a deeper basis with the community of faith. The tricky part is that it's God's church. It's not our church, but it is our community within those walls. And without those, beyond those walls. So in a consumerist society, it is even harder because those roots go deep, because you're exactly right. How do you get people to come back? Usually, especially like with a product or with radio, people want to benefit from it. People want to know that their lives will be better from that relationship. They will want to get something. And that is the hard part about being a pastor, about being a community of faith, because we don't really have a lot to give to them except a stronger, deeper spiritual connection, which sometimes people get aggravated because they come and they say, well, we're paying the bills. We want to get something out of this. And, I can see that and I can relate to that. But as a pastor in the Christian tradition, as a community of Christians, that's not what we're about. We're not about getting. We're about giving. And we understand that takes a long time to develop. It takes a long time to develop a attitude of gratitude.
You mentioned the attitude of gratitude. You know, mm-hmm, once you've got your community, the decision that they want to give back, you know, as a public radio station, we mm-hmm. have honor fundraisers a couple times a year. So, you know, we ask people for a couple of days in a row, you know, to remind them that, you know, we're here because of, you know, we're supported by you. Mm-hmm. So as a preacher, you know, people pass the plate, pass whatever basket, you know, asking for donations week after week. How do you, you know, ask your congregation week after week to continue to give?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't actually ask them week to week. We do pass the plate week to week, and it's pretty blatant. You know, it's the offering. It's your time to give back. Well, the way we do that is what I just explained, you know, about it takes a long time, you know, and usually there's a once a year time that we focus on giving. And so there are times that the finance chair or even I as the pastor have to talk to the congregation that, hey, we need to pay our bills. We need to, you know, pay our salaries and our staff. Mm-hmm. We're a little tight. But I think it takes planning. I think it takes commitment and diligence and a lot of prayer. but it's getting people excited about their relationship with Christ. And in reference to NPR or any kind of news station, it's getting people excited about being a part of their world and hearing comprehensive news that only y'all can give them and your viewpoint of the world and your lens. And so it's similar, you know. What you have to communicate to your people, just like I have to communicate, is how will your life be better with this relationship?
That was our colleague Antoinette Grajeda talking with Terry Gosnell, the pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church in Fayetteville. Thanks, Antoinette, for providing that. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And I like that what he said about how can a relationship make your life better, depending on what that relationship is. We hope your relationship with KUAF and Ozarks at Large, listening to radio that brings you voices and tells you about events in your area, hopefully that makes your life better.
Uh-huh. I hope so. I think it does. I mean, I have a relationship with, you know, people like Steve Inskeep that I wake up to
exactly.
every morning, you know.
Exactly.
And so I think, yeah.
And if it's an important relationship for you, you can help support us financially.
The numbers to call are 575-5823 or 800-522-5823 or supportkuaf.com. Sort of slow here this morning, but I do have a couple of people to thank. Steve Wright of Little Rock, actually. Wow.
Thanks, Steve.
Calling in with his contribution. And then Ozark Folkways in
Yay.
Winslow calling in this morning.
From Little Rock to Winslow and all points, well, not all points, but many points in between,
right.
KUAF providing you with news. This is a relaxed time of week for many people.
It is.
And that's what we try to do with the show. Later, Don Steinkraus talking about mm-hmm. bugs, attraction, and how that relates to the public radio model. We'll also hear a bit from the band Three Penny Acre. That's ahead.
Ahead. But for now, this week, Kyle talked to Senator Mark Pryor when the senator was in Fayetteville. Here's a portion of that conversation.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Senator Mark Pryor. Thank you for taking time out.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Senate is in recess, but we'll reconvene on Monday. And one of the first things, I think, that will be discussed is immigration reform. There is this plan that has been worked out between the AFL-CIO, the Chambers of Commerce, the so-called Gang of Eight senators. Does this mean there is a real chance for immigration reform?
I think there's a better chance to do comprehensive immigration reform this year than we've seen in a long, long time. And what I've told the eight senators who are doing this, it's four Democrats, four Republicans. I tell them all, I say, look, I'm cheering you on. I'm glad you're doing this. I want you to be successful in reaching consensus on these issues. But at the same time, I can't tell you I'm going to vote for it yet because I don't know what you've put together. And so they are supposed to make an announcement maybe this coming week. Please understand that it'll go through the Judiciary Committee. There'll be a robust, you know, amendment process and whatnot in the committee, and then it'll come to the floor. And so it may be, you know, 2 or 3 months away before we actually have a chance to look at it on the floor. But I'm glad that they are working together. The only way you're going to solve that issue, really, and most other issues in Washington, is in a bipartisan way. And so when you see a group of senators come together, try to work through it, that's the only only way to solve it.
As you mentioned, the legislation hasn't been revealed yet. It will be scheduled to be on Monday. There is discussion that there will be a clearer path to citizenship for some people who come here to work.
Yeah, I think some of them are calling it earned status because it's not going to be an easy thing. I hear, again, I don't know, but I hear it's going to take about 10 years. They can stay in the U.S., but they have to go through a 10-year process, make sure all their back taxes are paid and all these other things. I'm not quite sure of the details. And then even at that point, if they actually want to become a citizen, I think it's an additional 3 years. That's what I'm hearing. It's a total of 13 years.
We're about a month into the effects of sequestration. Theories abound that both parties feel there might be some political gain because of the sequestration. Deficit hawks saying, see, stuff is being cut. Others saying, see, the other side is cutting social programs. If there is indeed political gain by both parties, it doesn't seem like sequestration may end anytime soon.
No, I think we have sequestration for the rest of this fiscal year. And I think that, you know, the idea of it was supposed to be so bad and so painful that it would force us to get to a budget deal, which we didn't get to the budget deal, so now we have sequestration. We're still going to continue to see some pain over the course of this year. There'll be things that happen that will be kind of surprising and inconvenient. It's probably not going to be as bad as some people say and probably not as easy as other people say. So, you know, I think my bottom line is it's just not a good way to govern. Here again, we need to reach these bipartisan budget deals. Right now there's kind of a Democratic budget and there's a Republican budget. That's a dead-end street. We need to come together and put these budget deals together and do it. And, you know, the Senate did pass a budget a couple of weeks ago, but, again, it would be considered a Democratic budget. The Republicans passed one in the House. It would be considered a Republican budget. You know, who knows what happens beyond that. But it's just not the way to govern. We need to come together and get to consensus and work together and work through these issues. And the budget is very important. It's about national priorities, and it's about all kinds of different things and how our government should work and, to some extent, what type of government services we're going to provide, how much defense we're going to provide, how much things like law enforcement, education, highways. You know, all these things are about national priorities. So the Congress has done a very poor job in recent years on this.
Will there be discussion, do you think, after Monday, April 8th, about new gun laws or some sort of formation of gun laws?
Yeah, there's supposedly, when we get back next week, we're going to apparently go to the gun legislation that came out of the Judiciary Committee. I've already said that I'm going to not support the assault weapons ban that Senator Feinstein of California is offering. I will look at the other things. I know there will be some amendments on the floor. And, you know, I'll look and see what people offer. And I'm actually a co-sponsor of one amendment, which I think is endorsed by the NRA even. But it's about making sure the right information goes into a mental health database and also to make sure you can get your name out of the database when the time's right. And, you know, that's basically just about the integrity of the information that they use on the background check. But that's a bipartisan amendment, too. There's four of us working on that. So I assume we'll offer that and try to get that passed. But I don't really know. I don't have a great feel right now because I'm in Arkansas, not up there. I don't have a great feel for the other amendments that will be coming, but I'm sure there will be several. We'll look at them as they come.
Background checks, I mean, there some people call the loophole for the gun shows. Mm-hmm. Any chance that there would be momentum to try to close what some people call a loophole?
You know, I think it's possible that you could do that. It really depends on how it's structured. I know Senator Leahy has been working on something there. They've tried to – Senator Coburn of Oklahoma has been part of this process. There's been a process with Senator Coburn of Oklahoma and Senator Manchin of West Virginia, and then a few others like Chuck Schumer of New York, et cetera. But they have been working on something, and to my knowledge, they've not unveiled that. So we'll see. They were trying to come up with something that would be agreeable to everybody, basically, that would enhance the background checks, but maybe not go as far as some people want to go. So, you know, let's just see what they come up with. And I told them, again, I will certainly look at what they have, and I'll just have to evaluate it when I see it.
You're in Arkansas at the time when we've just had a week-old now oil spill down in Mayflower, and many people are pointing to that as a reason to maybe pause on the pipeline project coming from Canada, which you have supported. Any pause for you?
You know, not really. I mean, first, I want to know what happened on this pipeline. We have to remember this pipeline is 60 years old. And a lot of this is about how they're engineered and how they're built and how they're maintained. And we don't know the answers to this yet. But we do know that new pipelines are engineered better than the old ones, and they're maintained better, and they have more technology along with those. But I do think it's very important that we find out what happened in Mayflower and why. And I know the families there that have been impacted by the spill are frustrated because they're not getting any answers, and a lot of them can't get back in their homes yet. So, you know, we'll look at it. But I do think this, people have to understand that a pipeline is really the easiest, safest, and cheapest way to transport this. And your other options are going to be to put it in train cars, which can have, you know, wrecks and spills, put it on 18-wheelers. That's an issue. So really a pipeline is the best way. And just, and I know we've had a spill, and we do need to look at it, but it's, I guess the way I look at it, it's a little bit like a, you hate to say it, but it's a little bit like when a plane crashes. You know, air travel is very safe. It does happen every now and then. That doesn't mean you shut down, you know, the skies. That just means you make sure you're even safer next time.
Senator Mark Pryor, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That conversation recorded in the Anthony and Susan Hoy news studio on Friday morning.
Yes.
Arkansas's other senator, John Bozeman, was in Fayetteville this week. He was on campus for a forum, Food for Thought, and Timothy Dennis covered that, and we'll have something from that on tomorrow's daily edition of Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
It is the spring fundraiser at KUAF as well.
It is. This is a time when we come to you, our listeners, and ask for your support for programs like Weekend Edition, which we just heard, and this program right now, Weekend Ozarks at Large. We also have This American Life and On the Media coming up this morning.
The TED Radio Hour and the Encore Edition of Prairie Home Companion. Right. I like the Sunday lineup.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's easy.
You can Yes, it is. You know what else is easy is making a financial contribution to KUAF. It takes maybe 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. You can call 800-522-5823. You can pledge online at supportkuaf.com. And when you contribute, if you are in a position to do so, that you're telling us that you appreciate the variety and the spectrum of programming on KUAF, especially on a day like Sunday when we've got these weekly shows that I think a lot of people have come to have a pretty good relationship with.
Right.
I was just going to say another segue here. Speaking of relationships,
right.
We've talked about the relationship between public radio and the listener, the contributor. You, every month, talk to Dr. Donald Steinkraus, an entomologist at the university, and you had a recent conversation about kind of the relationship insects have with each other.
Right. I thought that it would be a good idea to, you know, to do a special fundraising edition of our monthly bug series. And we spoke about how a certain type of moth attracts each other. And they use pheromones. And here's this conversation.
Primary example of that is the giant satyr neid moths. We talked about those once before. You found a
When we went out and did wintering, overwintering.
Yeah, you found one, a Cecropia cocoon.
Right.
But this is a female Cecropia, and this is a male Cecropia.
Also, the robin.
It's called a robin moth.
Robin moth.
The Luna moth is in that group, and the Polyphemus moth. So these are called the giant silkworm moths of North America and the world. And if you look at the male, his antennae are much bigger. So you can immediately distinguish the males of these from the females by their very much wider antennae. And these antennae are used to sift out of the air the female's sex pheromone. So the female has much smaller antennae because she doesn't have to find the male. The male has to find her. And the way it works is when a female climbs out of her cocoon, she doesn't move or leave that area because she immediately puts out her glands on the end of her abdomen, which puts out this sex pheromone, which wafts through the air. Because moths are nocturnal, they can't use visual cues to find each other. So the male, in complete darkness, can detect a female from several miles away, and he zigzags back and forth in the plume of her pheromone, following the concentration, and will find her in total darkness, and then when he gets close to her, he'll mate with her.
So immediately when she comes out of her cocoon, she's mature, she's ready.
That's right. Oh, that's right. With this type of moth, the eggs are already mature inside of her abdomen and ready to be Well, they can be fertilized. But if she left her cocoon area and flew all around, the male wouldn't be able to find her. So in this group of moths, this extremely powerful sex pheromone is put out, and males from all over, miles away, will go through darkness to find her. Now, that'd be amazing if, like, a human could do that. It'd be as if, like, you know, a man could find his wife 10 miles away in complete darkness just by her scent and find that specific person or something. It's like, so this male will come to this female and not to the Luna moth female. And, because there's a different blend of pheromones that she puts out. So it's, and it does it by smelling the pheromone on his antennae. They have little tiny sensilli on their antennae, which are like a lock and key. The pheromone binds to a receptor site. It causes the neuron to fire. It goes to his brain, and he can detect extremely minute amounts of this pheromone.
Well, his antennae kind of look like, just for kind of trying to visualize for our listeners, it sort of looks like maybe a leaf of a fern.
True.
Maybe.
Or a little feather.
Yeah.
They're very beautiful. In fact, each of these antennae have about 60,000 of these little sensilli on them. So if you look at them with an electron microscope, you can see all these little sensory cells, these olfactory. They detect olfactory things. That's the pheromone, mm-hmm. is olfactory, it's smell. But, you know, it'd be an amazing thing if a human could do the same thing. I mean, mm-hmm. and there have been people that search for that with humans, you know, that can we, I mean, some of the perfumes men supposedly wear musks
right.
and things, right?
Manly smells.
Manly smells. And then women wear pheromones, I mean, yeah. perfumes, which mm-hmm. be in a sense like an attractive thing. A man might notice her from a distance,
yeah.
correct?
I think so, yeah.
So anyway, pheromones are extremely important. Actually, entomologists have spent a lot of time synthesizing these with chemists. You can actually study these pheromones and synthesize them chemically, and then they're actually used sometimes in mating disruption. Like if you were to take the pheromone from a silkworm moth and spread it all over the place in little pieces of plastic, the male would get distracted. He wouldn't be able to find mm-hmm. the female because he'd be smelling her everywhere. And so they're actually used in pest control tactics. See what I mean? They'll take an orchard or a vineyard, and they'll spread the sex pheromone all over the place, and the males come in, and they can't find the female. So they can't mate, and then the female.
And then there are no.
She can't lay fertile eggs.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of unique things about mm-hmm. the insect world, and so anyway, that's the silkworm strategy. It's this very, very elaborate. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
Well, and I like that I was already familiar with this moth, too.
Because you found the cocoon.
Right.
You were very sharp-eyed.
That was a conversation I had with entomologist Dr. Donald Steinkraus about how moths attract each other. I like that conversation, Kyle, because, you know, he talks about how this moth puts out a pheromone, a scent.
Right.
And it's kind of like radio because we put out a signal.
Very much so, yes.
And then also this moth, if the moth moves, if the female moth moves, the male can't find it. And so much like that, we're always at 91.3 FM.
Or KUAF.com.
Right. So if you value that you can always find us and you value our signal, please call 575-5823 or support KUAF.com.
It looks like there's somebody who values KUAF.
Yes. Donna calling in from Fayetteville this morning. Thank you, Donna. She has made a monthly sustaining pledge.
And as Molly Ron, who works here, points out, it's a way you can make a little be worth a lot.
Right.
You determine the amount that you contribute every month.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked. We both do this.
We do, you know, because sometimes it's a lot to give maybe $120 at one time.
Exactly. But if you spread that out over $10 a month per month,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So many people are doing that, becoming sustaining members of KUAF, and we do appreciate it. If you want to do that, that's great. We can tell you how at 800-522-5823. You can find out how at supportkuaf.com, but that's not how you have to do it. There is no way you have to become a member.
Right. There are many ways. Just you can send us a check. We can charge your credit card right now.
Right.
What other? Payroll deduction.
Right. And yeah, any way. And the great thing is, we tell you, pay what you want, which is something that Three Penny Acre has done. Three Penny Acre, of course, a trio that based in Fayetteville. They're brand new album, Rag and Bone, is going to be released soon with a CD release party at George's Majestic Lounge.
April 14th, 13th, next weekend.
Yes. I don't have the calendar in front of me. We're going to hear much more from them about this brand new CD on tomorrow's daily edition of Ozarks at Large. But I talked to them about something I'd seen them do at least once before when I saw them at a performance at Harrison, the Lyric Theater. At the intermission and afterwards, they had their merchandise on the table, and the CD was there, the previous CD, Highway 71, and it just said, pay what you want. No price tag, which is very much like the public radio model. Did this make a connection to you? Do you like this? Do you value this? We let you decide what to pay. And I asked Threepenny Acre when they were here, they were in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. I asked them, does that work? And I asked it specifically of Bernice Hembry, one of the members of Threepenny Acre.
It does work. And we tested it. We were very skeptical when we first tested this, but it actually really, it worked for us. And not every night, it doesn't always work, but we feel like it does balance itself out. And, you know, eventually we make the same as we do if we put $15 on the CD. Yeah. You know, because you have someone who comes up and says, oh my gosh, I so enjoyed the show, and here's $25, and I just want one CD.
Yeah.
You know, people come up and they throw $20 in, and they only take one CD. Yeah. But then you have someone come up and they say, hey, I only have $5, but I would love to have your music, and then we give them both CDs. And so it all works out in the end, and we feel good about it.
It's also a function of having more CDs and of vinyl and stuff on the merch table, mm-hmm. because people walk up and you get the worst question that you can be asked, which one's the best?
Right.
And, you know, that's like saying, which child do you mm-hmm. love the best? It just doesn't really, it's impossible to answer that. And so the idea of pay what you like has also been nice, especially if we go someplace new and we do have multiple items. You know, people are like, oh, I'd really like to take it all. And, well, they can, you know, and they can figure that out, and it ends up working out in the wash. We were introduced to that at a show in Houston mm-hmm. by this band Red Molly, this female trio. So it was like trio night at the Do-Si-Do in Houston. And so before they came over and they're like, we really have to talk. We do this thing and we really need you to participate. And they're like, well, we pay what you like for CDs. We're like, really? and they had a computer program with an Excel spreadsheet and all this stuff, and they talked me through it, and I said, okay, we'll try it. And we sold more merch that night than we ever had before at a show in Houston. And so,
really, it's a scheme for making people feel guilty.
Again, you're in line with the public radio model. Yeah.
Feel guilty enough to let you keep that $5 and change.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the way Baird looks at it. The way I look at it is, it is like the public radio model in a sense of what you do have to remind people that, hey, this is how we get paid. And, you know, so it's important to do that, but it's also nice to do that without saying you're required to pay this much. The idea is, you know, thank you for participating in this with us in this event, and we'd love for you to take some of our music home, but we know that it's not necessarily going to be the same price for everyone. And in the end, yeah, you're right. If someone's really excited about it, we want to make sure that they take the music away. We did the same thing with the single Rag and Bone from this album. There's this really great website now called Noise Trade, where you can put out, you know, free music. But it's structured in a way that it's not just like, here, let me give it away to you completely. What it allows a person to do is to give you, you know, their contact information in exchange for the music. They can also tip you. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of that same idea. There's a tip bucket there, and if they want to, they can throw in money. So we, you know, we use that, and it, I feel like it was a success.
Rag and Bone is trying to make this place a home. Reflections of abandoned life.
That's an excerpt from the title song from Rag and Bone, the brand new Threepenny Acre CD. Again, more conversation about the CD specifically with them tomorrow at noon on the Daily Ozarks at Large.
Right. But coming up ahead on this hour.
Yes, we still have Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers to give us an idea of what's going on today and the week ahead. We have another performance from Farmer in the Markets that was recorded by Antoinette Grajeda earlier this week in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And our usual Sunday montage, which has sort of a fundraising flair to it as well.
As well, right. And as you mentioned, this is our Spring On Air fundraiser, Sunday morning version. If you are sitting back relaxing, drinking your coffee, reading the paper, and listening to Weekend Ozarks at Large, please call 575-5823, 800-522-5823, or online, supportkuaf.com.
And as promised, with Christine and myself right now is Becca Martin Brown, who is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good.
Sleeping?
Sleeping or sleepy?
Have you been sleeping and are you sleepy?
No, yes.
Okay.
In that order.
I'll see what I can do to wake you up.
Okay.
Was it a couple of weeks ago you did a piece on the African and African American Studies play at the university?
It was.
You
it
did.
Was, yes, about a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we're going to talk a little bit more about it because I'm fascinated by the director, actually, whose name is Clenisha Dillon Sibley.
Yes.
She grew up in Macomb, Mississippi, population 13,000. And she said she was the Dillon girl who could write, the Dillon girl people could call on to read a poem at church, and the Dillon girl who did all the dancing. Her family owned a dry cleaning business and were kind of movers and shakers in equality, registering African Americans to vote. Her mother was one of the first blacks to attend the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg. And their dry cleaning business was set on fire once during a time of racial unrest. She says that Macomb was actually closer to the Old South than the New South. She's not quite 29, but she remembers two separate proms.
Wow.
And two separate debutante balls. But at the same time, she was homecoming queen her senior year. So lots of
changes,
disparity and changes. Mm-hmm. And so as a playwright, she said she can't help but draw on her experiences, but she doesn't want to be segregated as a black playwright, which is an interesting thought because she said once you become a black playwright or a female playwright or a feminist playwright
or a southern playwright
or southern playwright,
that's all you're known of.
People look for your work to fill a hole in their season
exactly.
That requires diversity.
Right. Oh, they're not looking at you as a playwright of talent.
Right.
Necessarily, yeah.
So she's had a play premiere now at the Aurora Fox Art Center in Denver called Tell Martha Not to Moan. And the characters in it, it's a love story. The characters could be any color. It's set in Detroit around the time of the 1967 riot. But this is about Leroy, who has Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and how you deal with it. And she said it has nothing to do with being a black play. So at the same time, she thinks there's a need for more black presence in theater, and she is directing Waiting to Be Invited,
right,
which is the African and African American Studies play set in 1964 Atlanta, just after the Supreme Court outlawed segregation in eating establishments. Mm-hmm. So these four women decide to take the bus downtown because, you know, the cool eating establishments used to be in department stores,
right,
and see if they can eat.
Yeah, and they decide to walk through.
Interesting, really interesting topic. Interesting to think about theater as a vehicle for thought on these topics. You've got one more chance to see the show at 7:30 tonight at the Arkansas Union Theater.
What if I have no money?
That's great because it's free.
That yeah. is awesome.
And if you do have $3 to $6, you can hit the Renaissance and Fantasy Fair of the Ozarks today from 10 to 5 at the Washington County Fairgrounds.
Great.
Or you can go to Nurture the Art Experience, which is the fundraiser for the Art Experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts at 5 o'clock tonight at Greenhouse Grill in Fayetteville, and it's
$15. Not bad.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. And still ahead, another performance from Farmer in the Markets that was recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And in just a moment, something that's become something of a tradition for us now on Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Right. So we were talking earlier in the hour about how when I started, we wanted to do sort of a few new things with
right.
Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Not just be a collection of things from earlier in the week, but
right.
some new material.
Right. And we heard Timothy Dennis's Week in Review earlier. And I've been trying to do sort of a week in preview on some of the shows as well. You know, like say it's National Waffle Day.
You went to Waffle House.
Right. Went to Waffle House.
And it can be something that is fun, mm-hmm. but you've also talked about the importance of donating blood mm-hmm. and previewed some other things that are coming up in the region as
right,
well.
Right.
Yeah.
And you started sort of taking some of those stories and finding a common, you know, a theme.
Right.
And
a montage. I don't know if we officially call it. Yeah, we refer to it as the Sunday
montage. Yeah.
And the idea was, again, that Weekend Ozarks at Large, since we're not on at noon like the daily Ozarks at Large or 7 p.m., it's kind of a different feel. Mm-hmm. The day, for many of us, not everybody, but for many of us, unrolls a little bit slower than the other days of the week. And it certainly has a different feel. And so, much like Will Shorts has the weekly puzzle on Weekend Edition,
right,
about 20 minutes till 8 every Sunday, we thought the montage had that same sort of Sunday feel. We just take 9 or 10 clips from pop culture related by one theme and then see if you can guess where they come from.
Right. I should say that it is our spring on-air fundraiser.
Yes.
Because that goes
yes.
with the theme of today's montage.
Yes. So we'll get to the montage in a second. But yes, as you bring up, it is the spring fundraiser. And the reason we do a fundraiser is to remind you that the only reason you can hear Weekend Edition or Ozarks at Large or This American Life on a Sunday morning is because you pay a big part of the programming bill.
Almost 90%
is generated here, right, locally, and 60% more, a little bit more, I think, that 60% of our budget comes directly from you and listeners like you,
right,
directly.
And if you'd like to join the group of listeners that support KUAF, you may call 575-5823 or 800-522-5823. We have volunteers that have they've come in on their Sunday morning
yes,
to take your phone calls, to take your contributions. And if you're listening at your computer, you can always donate at supportkuaf.com.
We are asking you to consider becoming a contributor, or if it's time to do so, we're asking you to contribute again, to renew your contribution. And if you have any questions about the process, you can ask our phone volunteers, or you can look online where all your questions will be answered.
Right.
Questions. So there's a lot of asking going on this week. So that was the inspiration for this week's montage. So here are 10 clips from popular culture involving some of the most famous popular culture questions of the past few decades.
Asking, yeah.
All right. So see how many you know. Here we go. We're a public radio station, and as you probably know, public radio stations every couple... Uh-oh. Let's see. This is live radio.
Oh, no.
I don't think we have it.
Are you sure?
Well, we'll check. Hang on. I tell you what we will do. Wait a second. Let's see if this is it.
That's it.
Okay, so here we go, the montage of questions here on a live Weekend Ozarks at Large.
I wonder, who wrote the book of love? Tell me, who wrote the book of love?
Mr. Owl, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Bar?
Let's find out. One, two, three.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand?
Is it safe?
You're talking to me.
Who put the bomb in the bomb, the bomb, the bomb? Who put the ram in the ram a lam a ding dong? Who put the bop in the bop, shibop, shibop?
Can you hear me now? Good. Can you hear me now?
Are you in here? Hello? Who's there?
You talking to me? You talking to me? Then who the hell else are you talking to? Talking to me?
One, two, three, yeah!
She sneaks about the world, get to Carolina. She's a sticky finger torture from Berlin down to Belize.
toxic China. Tell me where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego.
So there are 10 questions from popular culture. How many can you name? If any of them have you stumped, you can always go to OzarksAtLarge.com every Sunday because we have the list there.
Right.
My apologies to Waldo of Where's Waldo? Didn't get that one in there. This is an edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And one of the things we like to do on Weekend Ozarks at Large, as well as the daily editions, is bring in musicians. Local musicians or visiting musicians. We've had quite a few so far in 2013.
We have. Our goal has been to do at least one a week, and I think we're beating that goal.
We're even a little ahead, yes.
Yeah, right.
And since this was the weekend that the Fayetteville Farmers Market opened, and many other farmers markets are either opening this weekend or very soon.
Mm-hmm. As Becca told us.
Right. Yes. From Gravette to Eureka Springs to Bentonville.
Jasper.
All over the place. If you go to the Fayetteville Farmers Market, and I think they've been at the Bentonville Farmers Market, too, a couple times.
I saw them yesterday, band that we're talking about.
Okay.
Yes, they had quite the crowd, actually.
I bet they did. Mm-hmm. And the band, two University of Arkansas students and two students at Fayetteville High School. And they've been together for a couple of years.
Right.
And everyone loves them. You can't help but smile when you're listening to them. And Antoinette Grajeda invited them into the studio. You heard part of it on Friday's mm-hmm. daily edition of Ozarks at Large, but they're Farmer in the Markets.
Right, Farmer in the Markets, and I believe this song is called In the Summertime.
Oh, perfect. Well, here it is. Summertime, Farmer in the Markets, recorded by Antoinette Grajeda inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They came in on Thursday evening. We had one of their performances on the Friday Daily Show.
And if you were at the Fayetteville Farmers Market yesterday, then you may have seen them. I believe they were on the, southeast corner of the square.
Yeah.
They had quite the crowd. And here was this song this morning.
I was unable to go to a farmer's market yesterday. I was in Mount Sherman.
Which is close
slice
to Jasper.
Of paradise, yeah. Yes, in Newton County, and had a wonderful time there.
Right.
You know, just about a 36-hour break from work, and just kind of got recharged.
And much needed, I'm sure, because we are
in the middle of our spring fundraiser.
Right. Right. And that's the time when we work really hard coming into you, our listeners, and asking you to help support, you know, bringing in bands like Farmer in the Market.
Right.
Because it does cost money and...
Yes, it does. Right. And time and equipment. Mm-hmm. So every program, we mentioned that every program costs money, and we think it's worth it, whether it's Morning Edition, whether it's This American Life, or Ozarks at Large.
Right.
And if you appreciate hearing your neighbors perform live, and that's something we couldn't do in the old building, and it's something before The Daily Show we really didn't have time to do. But we love talking about local artists, musicians, craftspeople. We love that, and we have so many opportunities to do it now.
Right. And you have so many different opportunities to contribute to your public radio station. What a lot of people don't realize is that we raise over close to 90% of our budget on our own. We don't have commercials. We don't have advertisements. And to do that, we have to come to you and ask for your support. And if you would like to contribute to KUAF and programs like Weekend Ozarks at Large, please call 575-5823 or 800-522-5823 or online supportkuaf.com.
It takes just a couple of minutes. Want to also mention something else that KUAF has started on Sundays that a lot of people really like, and that's every Sunday night at 7, Sunday Symphony.
With Katie Hendrickson. Right.
And most Sundays she comes in and talks to us a little bit about what, you know, is going to be on that night. Just want to remind you, she's got an all-new show tonight at 7, Sunday Symphony with Katie Hendrickson. It was her birthday yesterday.
It was. Happy birthday, Katie.
800-522-5823 or online at supportkuaf.com. We've heard from some people this morning who are becoming sustaining members, meaning they give just a little. Right now, the same amount next month and next month, and it turns into a pretty nice gift for KUAF, and we appreciate that.
And one of the great things about being a sustaining membership is it actually saves KUAF money because we're not sending
exactly.
you renewal notices,
right.
reminding you that it's time to give again. So
right, so you can do that. But you give the amount you want in the way you want as often as you want. We leave all those decisions up to you. 800-522-5823 or supportkuaf.com. Ira Glass and This American Life in 1 minute on KUAF, a special fundraising edition that Ira and his staff did. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
This is also KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Low Gap. Yep. Drove through it this morning.
I was going to say, I feel like that is on the way to or way from, to or from.
Right. Right.
Mount Sherman to Fayetteville.
That's it. Right. So it's between Kingston and Mount Sherman.
Low gap. I wonder if there's a high gap.
Oh, I don't know. We'll find out, though, if there is. Someone will listen. That's what's great about our listeners. 1-800-522-5823. You can also pledge online at supportkuaf.com. Christina, thanks for coming in this morning and helping me out with this live edition of the program.
Right, of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And you and I and Antoinette will be back tomorrow at noon.
We will.
Brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Mm-hmm. And all this week, we're going to have brand new editions, thanks to Jacqueline Froelich and Timothy Dennis and Katie Hendrickson and all the other contributors.
Right.
All right. So
Thank you.
800-522-5823, 575-5823, or online at supportkuaf.com. And thanks.